13. Rory set the letter on her kitchen counter and stared at it for a moment. Her chest felt as if a dead weight were pressing against it. Her heart was pounding and her stomach churned. The post office box number for the return address didn't tell her much. The letter could as easily be from Kate as Clay. It could even be from Mary. Taking a deep, calming breath, Rory reached for the envelope from Kentucky first. The return address told her nothing. She didn't know anyone who lived in that state. The slip of paper inside confused her, too. She read it several times, not understanding. It appeared to be registration papers for Night Song from the National Show Horse Association. Rory Campbell was listed as owner, with Clay's name as breeder. The date of Night Song's birth was also recorded. Rory slumped into a kitchen chair and battled an attack of memories and tears. Clay was giving her Night Song. It was Night Song who'd brought them together, and it was through Night Song that they'd remain linked. Life would go on. The loss of one couple's love wouldn't alter the course of history. But now there was something, a single piece of paper that would connect her to Clay, something that gave testimony to their sacrifice. Rory had needed that, and Clay had apparently known it. They'd made the right decision, Rory told herself for the 100th time. Clay's action confirmed it. Clay was wide open spaces and sleek, well-trained horses, while she thrived in the crowded city. His strength came from his devotion to the land. Hers came from the love of children and literature and the desire to create her own stories. They were dissimilar in every way and alike. In the most important matters, the most telling, they were actually very much alike. Neither of them was willing to claim happiness at the expense of someone else. Tears spilled down her cheeks, and sniffling, Rory wiped them aside. The drops dampened her fingertips as she picked up the second envelope, blurring the return address. But even before she opened it, Rory realized the letter was from Kate. Clay wouldn't write her, and everything Mary had wanted to say she'd already said the morning Rory left Elk Run. 3 handwritten sheets slipped easily from the envelope, with Kate's evenly slanted signature at the bottom of the last. The letter was filled with chatty news about Nightingale and some of the people Rory had met. There were so many, and connecting names with faces taxed her memory. Kate wrote about the county fair, telling Rory that she'd missed a very exciting pig race. The biggest news of all was that after years of trying, Mary had finally won a blue ribbon for her apple pie, an honor long overdue in Kate's opinion. Toward the end of the letter, Clay's fiancé casually mentioned that Clay would be in San Francisco the first week of September for a horse show. The American saddlebreds from Elk Run were well known throughout the Pacific Coast for their fire and elegance. Clay had high hopes of repeating last year's wins in the 5-gated and fine harness championships. Rory's pulse shifted into overdrive, and her fingers tightened on the letter. Clay was coming to San Francisco. He hadn't said anything about the show to Rory, although he must have known about it long before she'd left Nightingale. Kate went on to say that she'd asked Clay if he planned to look up Rory while he was in town, but he'd claimed there wouldn't be time. Kate was sure Rory would understand and not take offense. She closed by saying that her father might also be attending the horse show, and if he did, Kate would try to talk him into letting her tag along. Kate promised she'd phone Rory the minute she arrived in town if she could swing it with her father. Not until Rory folded the letter to return it to the envelope did she notice the postscript on the back of the last page. She turned over the sheet of pink stationery. The words seemed to jump off the page. Kate was planning an October wedding and would send Rory an invitation. She ended with, "Write soon." Rory's breath caught in her lungs. An October wedding. In only a few weeks, Kate would belong to Clay. Rory closed her eyes as her heart squeezed into a knot of pain. It wasn't that she hadn't known this was coming. Kate and Clay's wedding was inevitable, but Rory hadn't thought Clay would go through with it quite so soon. With trembling hands, she set the letter aside.
"Rory, love, I can't honestly believe you want to go to a horse show," Dan complained, scanning the entertainment section of the Friday evening paper. They sat in the minuscule living room in her apartment and sipped their coffee while they tossed around ideas for something to do. Rory smiled blandly, praying Dan couldn't read her thoughts. He'd offered several suggestions for the night's amusement, but Rory had rejected each one, until she pretended to hit upon the idea of attending the horse show.
"A horse show?" he repeated.
"You never told me you were interested in horses."
"It would be fun, don't you think?"
"Not particularly."
"But, Dan, it's time to broaden our horizons. We might learn something."
"Does this mean you're going to insist we attend a demolition derby next weekend?"
"Of course not. I read an article about this horse show, and I just thought we'd enjoy the gated classes and harness competitions. Apparently, lots of saddlebreds and national show horses are going to be performing. Doesn't that interest you?"
"No."
Rory shrugged, slowly releasing a sigh. "Then a movie's fine," she said, not even trying to hide her disappointment. They'd seen each other only a handful of times since Rory's return. Rory wouldn't be going out with him tonight if he hadn't persisted. She hoped he'd get the message and start dating other women, but that didn't seem to be happening.
"I have no idea why you want to see a horse show," Dan said once more.
For the past few days, the newspapers had been filled with information regarding the countrywide show, in which Kate had said several of Elk Run's horses would be participating. In all the years she'd lived in San Francisco, Rory couldn't remember reading about a single equine exhibition, but then she hadn't exactly been looking for one either. If Dan refused to go with her, Rory was determined to attend the event on her own. She didn't have any intention of seeking out Clay, but the opportunity to see him, even from a distance, was too tempting to let pass. It would probably be the last time she'd ever see him.
"I don't know what's got into you lately, Rory," Dan muttered. "Just when I think our lives are on track, you throw me for a loop."
"I said a movie was fine." Her tone was testier than she meant it to be, but Dan had been harping on the same subject for weeks, and she was tired of it. If he didn't want her company, he should start dating someone else. She wasn't going to suddenly decide she was madly in love with him, as he seemed to expect. Again and again, Dan phoned to tell her he loved her, that his love was enough for both of them. She always stopped him there, unable to imagine spending the rest of her life with him. If she couldn't have Clay, and she couldn't, then she wasn't willing to settle for anyone else.
"I'm talking about a lot more than seeing a movie."
He laid the newspaper aside and seemed to carefully consider his next words. "Really, Dan, you're making a mountain out of a molehill," Rory said. "Just because I wanted to do something a little out of the ordinary."
"Eating at an Armenian restaurant is a little out of the ordinary," he said, frowning. "But horse shows? I can't even begin to understand why you'd want to watch a bunch of animals running around in circles."
"Well, you keep insisting I've changed," she said flippantly. If she'd known Dan was going to react so strongly to her suggestion, she'd never have made it. "I guess this only goes to prove you're right."
"How much writing have you done in the past month?"
The question was completely unexpected. She answered him with a shrug, hoping he'd drop the subject, knowing he wouldn't.
"None, right? I've seen you sitting at your computer, staring into space with that sad look on your face. I remember how you used to talk about your stories. Your eyes would light up, enthusiasm would just spill out of you."
His hand reached for hers, tightly squeezing her fingers.
"What happened to you, Rory? Where's the joy? Where's the energy?"
"You're imagining things," she said, nearly leaping to her feet in an effort to sidestep the issues he was raising. She grabbed her purse and a light sweater, eager to escape the apartment, which suddenly felt too small. "Are you going to take me to that movie, or are you going to sit here and ask questions I have no intention of answering?" Dan stood, smiling faintly.
"I don't know what happened while you were on vacation, and it's not important that I know, but whatever it was hurt you badly."
Rory tried to deny it, but couldn't force the lie past her tongue. She swallowed and turned her head away, eyes burning.
"You won't be able to keep pretending forever. Put whatever it is behind you. If you want to talk about it, I've got a sympathetic ear and a sturdy shoulder. I'm your friend, Rory."
"Dan, please. I know you're not in love with me," he said quietly. "I suspect you met someone else while you were away, but that doesn't matter to me. Whatever happened during those 2 weeks is over."
"Dan." He took her hand, pulling her back onto the sofa, then sitting down beside her. She couldn't look at him.
"Given time, you'll learn to love me," he cajoled, holding her hand, his voice filled with kindness. "We're already good friends, and that's a lot more than some people have when they marry."
He raised her fingers to his mouth and kissed them lightly. "I'm not looking for passion. I had that with my first wife. I learned the hard way that desire is a poor foundation for a solid marriage."
"We've talked about this before," Rory protested. "I can't marry you, Dan. Not when I feel the way I do about someone else."
Her mouth trembled with the effort to suppress tears.
Dan was right. As much as she hadn't wanted to face the truth, she'd been heartbroken from the moment she'd left Nightingale. She'd tried to forget Clay, believing that was the best thing for them both. Yet she cherished the memories, knowing those few brief days were all she'd ever have of this man she loved.
"You don't have to decide right now," Dan assured her.
"There isn't anything to decide," she persisted.
His fingers continued to caress hers, and when he spoke, his voice was thick. "At least you've admitted there is someone else."
"Was," she corrected.
"I take it there isn't any chance the two of you—"
"None," she blurted, unwilling to discuss anything that had to do with Clay.
"I know it's painful for you right now, but all I ask is that you seriously consider my proposal. My only wish is to take care of you and make you smile again, help you forget."
His mouth sought hers, and though his kiss wasn't unpleasant, it generated no more excitement than before. No rush of adrenaline, no urgency. She hadn't minded Dan's kisses in the past, but until she met Clay, she hadn't known the warmth and magic a man's touch could create. Dan must have read her thoughts, because he said in a soothing voice, "The passion will come in time. You shouldn't even look for it now, but it'll be there. Maybe not this month or the next, but you'll feel it eventually. I promise." Rory brushed the hair from her face, confused and uncertain. Clay was marrying Kate in just a few weeks. Her own life stretched before her, lonely and barren. Surely she deserved some happiness, too. Beyond a doubt, Rory knew Clay would want her to build a good life for herself. But if she married Dan, it would be an act of selfishness, and she feared she'd end up hurting him.
"Think about it," Dan urged. "That's all I ask."
"Dan,
just consider it. I know the score, and I'm willing to take the risk, so you don't have to worry about me. I'm a big boy."
He rubbed his thumb against the inside of her wrist.
"Now, promise me you'll think honestly about us getting married."
Rory nodded, although she already knew what her answer would have to be. Dan heaved a sigh.
"Now, are you really interested in that horse show, or are we going to a movie?"
"The movie."
There was no use tormenting herself with thoughts of Clay.
He belonged to Kate in the same way that he belonged to the country. Rory had no claim to either. The film Dan chose was surprisingly good, a comedy, which was just what Rory needed to lift her spirits. Afterward, they dined at an Italian restaurant and drank wine and discussed politics. Dan went out of his way to be the perfect companion, making no demands on her, and Rory was grateful. It was still relatively early when he drove her back to her apartment, and he eagerly accepted her invitation for coffee. As he eased the MG into a narrow space in front of her building, he suddenly paused, frowning. "Do you have new neighbors?"
"Not that I know of. Why?"
Dan nodded toward the battered blue pickup across the street.
"Whoever drives that piece of junk is about to bring down the neighborhood property values."
14. Clay. His name escaped Rory's lips on a rush of excitement. She jerked open the car door and stepped onto the sidewalk, her legs trembling, her pulse thundering.
"Rory?" Dan called, agitated. "Who is this man?"
She hardly heard him. A door slammed in the distance, and Rory whirled around and saw that Clay had been sitting inside his truck, apparently waiting for her to return. He'd been parked in the shadows, and she hadn't noticed him. Dan joined her on the pavement and placed his hand possessively on her shoulder. His grip was the only thing that rooted her in reality. His hand, the restraining force that prevented her from flying into Clay's arms.
"Who is this guy?" Dan asked a second time.
Rory opened her mouth to explain and realized she couldn't. Not in a few words. "A friend," she whispered, but that seemed so inadequate.
"He's a cowboy," Dan hissed,
making it sound as though Clay's close-fitting jeans and jacket were the garb of a man just released from jail. Clay crossed the street, and his long strides made short work of the distance separating him from Rory.
"Hello, Rory,"
she heard the faint catch in his voice. "Clay." A muscle moved in his cheek as he looked past her to Dan, who squared the shoulders of his Brooks Brothers suit. No one spoke until Rory saw that Clay was waiting for an introduction. "Clay Franklin, this is Dan Rogers. Dan is the stockbroker I mentioned before. It was his sports car I was driving."
Clay nodded. "I remember now."
His gaze slid away from Rory to the man at her side. Dan stepped around Rory and accepted Clay's hand. She noticed that when Dan dropped his arm to his side, he flexed his fingers a couple of times, as though to restore the circulation. Rory smiled to herself. Clay's handshake was the solid one of a man accustomed to working with his hands. When Dan shook hands, it was little more than a polite business greeting, an archaic but necessary exchange.
"Clay and his brother Skip were the family who helped me when the MG broke down," Rory explained to Dan.
"Ah, yes. I remember your saying something about that now."
"I was about to make a pot of coffee," Rory went on, unable to take her eyes off Clay.
She drank in the sight of him, painfully noting the crow's feet that fanned out from the corners of his eyes. She couldn't remember their being quite so pronounced before.
"Yes, by all means, join us." Dan's invitation lacked any real welcome.
Clay said nothing. He just stood there, looking at her. Almost no emotion showed in his face, but she could feel the battle that raged inside him. He loved her still, and everything about him told her that.
"Please join us," she whispered.
Any lingering hope that Dan would take the hint and make his excuses faded as he slipped his arm protectively around Rory's shoulders.
"I picked up some Swiss mocha coffee beans earlier," he said, "and Rory was going to make a pot of that." "Swiss mocha coffee?" Clay repeated, blinking quizzically. "Decaffeinated, naturally," Dan hurried to add. Clay arched his brows expressively, as if to say that made all the difference in the world. With Dan glued to her side, Rory reluctantly led the way into her building.
"Have you been here long?" she asked Clay, while they stood waiting for the elevator.
"About an hour."
"Oh, Clay." Rory felt terrible. Although it wasn't her fault, she hadn't known he intended to stop by. Perhaps he hadn't known himself and had been lured to her apartment the same way she'd been contemplating the horse show.
"You should have phoned." Dan's comment was casual, but it contained a hint of accusation. "But then I suppose you folks tend to drop in on each other all the time. Things are more casual in the country, aren't they?"
Rory sent Dan a furious glare. He returned her look blankly, as if to say he had no idea what could have angered her. Rory was grateful that the elevator arrived just then. Clay didn't comment on Dan's observation, and the three stepped inside, facing the doors as they slowly closed.
"When you weren't home, I asked the neighbors if they knew where you'd gone," Clay said.
"The neighbors?" Dan echoed, making no effort to disguise his astonishment.
"What did they tell you?" Rory asked.
Clay smiled briefly, then sobered when he glanced at Dan.
"They said they didn't know who lived next door, never mind where you'd gone." "Frankly, I'm surprised they answered the door at all," Dan said conversationally. "There's a big difference between what goes on in small towns and big cities."
Dan spoke like a teacher to a grade school pupil. Rory wanted to kick him, but reacting in anger would only increase the embarrassment. She marveled at Clay's tolerance.
"Things are done differently here," Dan continued. "Few people have anything to do with their neighbors. People prefer to mind their own business. Getting involved leads to problems."
Clay rubbed the side of his face.
"It seems to me not getting involved would lead to even bigger problems."
"I'm grateful Clay and Skip were there when your car broke down," Rory said to Dan, hoping to put an end to this tiresome discussion. "Otherwise, I don't know what would have happened. I could still be on that road waiting for someone to stop and help me," she said, forcing the joke.
"Yes," Dan admitted, clearing his throat. "I suppose I should thank you for assisting Rory."
"And I suppose I should accept your thanks," Clay returned.
"How's Mary?" Rory asked, quickly changing the subject as the elevator slid to a stop at her floor. Humor sparked in Clay's gray eyes.
"Mary's strutting around proud as a peacock ever since she won a blue ribbon at the county fair."
She had reason to be proud. Rory could just picture her. Knowing Mary, she was probably wearing the ribbon pinned to her apron. "What about Skip?" Rory asked next, hungry for news about each one. She took the keys from her bag and systematically began unlocking the three bolts on her apartment door.
"Fine. He started school last week. He's a senior this year."
Rory already knew that, but she nodded.
"Kate sends you her best," Clay said next, his voice carefully nonchalant.
"Tell her I said hello, too."
"She hasn't heard from you. No one has."
"I know. I'm sorry. She wrote after I got home from Canada, but I haven't had a chance to answer."
On several occasions, Rory had tried to make herself sit down and write Kate a letter, but she couldn't. At the end of her second week back home, she'd decided it was better for everyone involved if she didn't keep in touch with Kate. When the wedding invitation came, Rory planned to mail an appropriate gift, and that would be the end of it. Once they were inside the apartment, Rory hung up her sweater and purse and motioned for both men to sit down. "It'll only take a minute to put on the coffee."
"Do you need me to grind the beans?" Dan asked, obviously eager to assist her.
"No, thanks. I don't need any help."
His offer was an excuse to question her about Clay, and Rory wanted to avoid that if she could, at least for now. Her apartment had never felt more cramped than it did when she rejoined the two men in her tiny living room.
Clay rose to his feet as she entered, and the simple, courtly gesture made her want to weep. He was telling her that he respected her and that he cared for her, would always care for her. The area was just large enough for one sofa and a coffee table. Her desk and computer stood against the other wall. Rory pulled the chair away from the desk, turned it to face her guests, and perched on the edge. Only then did Clay sit back down. "So," Dan said with a heavy sigh, "Rory never did tell me what it is you do in Nightingale," Rory and Clay said together. "Oh, yes, Nightingale," Dan murmured, clearing his throat. "I take it you're some kind of farmer? Do you grow soybeans or wheat?"
"Clay owns a stud farm where he raises American saddlebreds," Rory said.
Dan looked as if she'd punched him in the stomach. He'd obviously made the connection between Clay and her earlier interest in attending the horse show.
"I see," he breathed, and his voice shook a little. "Horses. So you're involved with horses?"
Clay glanced at him curiously.
"How's Night Song?" Rory asked,
before Dan could say anything else. Just thinking about the foal with her wide, curious eyes and long, wobbly legs produced a feeling of tenderness in Rory.
"She's a rare beauty," Clay told her softly, "showing more promise every day."
Rory longed to tell Clay how much it had meant to her that he'd registered Night Song in her name, how she cherished that gesture more than anything in her life. She also knew that Clay would never sell the foal, but would keep and love her all her life.
An awkward silence followed,
and in an effort to smooth matters over, she explained to Dan,
"Clay was gone one night when Star Bright, one of the brood mares, went into labor. If that's what they call it in horses?" she asked Clay. He nodded. "Anyway, I couldn't wake Skip, and I didn't know where Mary was sleeping, and something had to be done, quick."
Dan leaned forward, his eyes revealing his shock.
"You don't mean to tell me you delivered the foal?"
"Not exactly."
Rory wished now that she hadn't said anything to Dan about that night. No one could possibly understand what she and Clay had shared in those few hours. Trying to convey the experience to someone else only diminished its significance.
"I'll get the coffee," Rory said, standing. "I'm sure it's ready."
From her kitchen, she could hear Dan and Clay talking, although she couldn't make out their words. She filled three cups and placed them on a tray, together with cream and sugar, then carried it into the living room. Once more, Clay stood. He took the tray out of her hands and set it on the coffee table. Rory handed Dan the first cup and saucer, and Clay the second. He looked uncomfortable as he accepted it.
"I'm sorry, Clay. You prefer a mug, don't you?"
The cup seemed frail and tiny, impractical, cradled in his strong hand.
"It doesn't matter. If I'm going to be drinking Swiss mocha coffee, I might as well do it from a china cup."
He smiled into her eyes, and Rory couldn't help reciprocating.
"Eaten any seafood fettuccine lately?" she teased.
"Can't say I have." "It's my favorite dinner," Dan inserted,
apparently feeling left out of the conversation. "We had linguine tonight, but Rory's favorite is sushi." Her eye caught Clay's, and she saw that the corner of his mouth quirked with barely restrained humor. She could just imagine what the people of Nightingale would think of a sushi bar. Skip would probably turn up his nose, insisting that the small pieces of seaweed and raw fish looked like bait. The coffee seemed to command everyone's attention for the next minute or so.
"I'm still reeling from the news of your adventures on this stud farm," Dan commented, laughing lightly. "You could have knocked me over with a feather when you said you'd help deliver a foal. I would never have believed it of you, Rory."
"I brought a picture of Night Song," Clay said, cautiously putting down his coffee cup.
He unsnapped the pocket of his wide-yoked shirt and withdrew two color photographs, which he handed to Rory.
I meant to show these to you earlier, but I got sidetracked.
Oh, Clay, she breathed, studying the filly with her gleaming chestnut coat. She's grown so much in just the past month, she said, her voice full of wonder.
I thought you'd be impressed.
Reluctantly, Rory shared the pictures with Dan, who barely glanced at them before giving them back to Clay.
Most men carry around pictures of their wife and kids, Dan stated, his eyes darting to Clay and then Rory.
Rory supposed this comment was Dan's less than subtle attempt to find out if Clay was married. Taking a deep breath, she said, Clay's engaged to a neighbor, Kate Logan.
I see.
Apparently he did, because he set aside his coffee cup and got up to stand behind Rory. Hands resting on her shoulders, he leaned forward and brushed his mouth over her cheek.
Rory and I have been talking about getting married ourselves, haven't we, darling?
15. No emotion revealed itself on Clay's face, but Rory could sense the tight rein he kept on himself. Dan's words had dismayed him.
Is that true, Rory? He said after a moment.
Dan's fingers tightened almost painfully on her shoulders.
Just tonight, we were talking about getting married. Tell him, darling.
Her eyes refused to leave Clay's. She had been talking to Dan about marriage, although she had no intention of accepting his offer. Dan knew where he stood, knew she was in love with another man. But nothing would be accomplished by telling Clay that she'd always love him, especially since he was marrying Kate in a few weeks. Yes, Dan has proposed.
I'm crazy about Rory and have been for months, Dan announced, squarely facing his competition.
He spoke for a few more minutes, outlining his goals. Within another 10 years, he planned to be financially secure and hoped to retire. Dan's got a bright future, Rory echoed.
I see.
Clay replaced his coffee cup on the tray, then glanced at his watch and rose to his feet.
I suppose I should head back to the Cow Palace.
How are you doing in the show? Rory asked, distraught, not wanting him to leave. Kate would have him the rest of their lives. Surely a few more minutes with him wouldn't matter. Kate wrote that you were going after several championships.
I'm doing exactly as I expected.
The words were clipped, as though he was impatient to get away. Rory knew she couldn't keep him any longer. Clay's face was stern with purpose and resignation. I'll see you out, she told him.
I'll come with you,
Dan said. She whirled around and glared at him. No, you won't.
Good to see you again, Rory.
Clay said, standing just inside her apartment, his hand on the door. His mouth was hard and flat, and he held himself rigid, eyes avoiding hers. He stepped forward and shook Dan's hand.
It was a pleasure, Dan said in a tone that conveyed exactly the opposite.
Same here.
Clay dropped his hand. I'm glad you came by, Rory told him quietly. It was nice seeing you. The words sounded inane, meaningless. He nodded brusquely, opened the door, and walked into the hallway. Clay, she said, following him out, her heart hammering so loudly it seemed to echo off the walls. He stopped and slowly turned around. Now that she had his attention, Rory didn't know what to say. Listen, I'm sorry about the way Dan was acting. He shook off her apology.
Don't worry about it.
Her fingers tightened on the doorknob, and she wondered if this was really the end. Will I see you again? She asked, despite herself.
I don't think so,
he answered hoarsely. He looked past her as though he could see through the apartment door and into her living room where Dan was waiting.
Do you honestly love this guy?
He's He's been a good friend. Clay took two steps toward her, then stopped. As if it was against his better judgment, he raised his hand and lightly drew his finger down the side of her face. Rory closed her eyes at the wealth of sensation the simple action provoked.
Be happy, Rory. That's all I want for you.
The rain hit during the last week of September, and the dreary, dark afternoon suited Rory's mood. Normally, autumn was a productive time for her, but she remained tormented with what she felt sure was a terminal case of writer's block. She sat at her desk, her computer humming merrily, as she read over the accumulation of an entire weekend's work. One measly sentence. There had been a time when she could write 4 or 5 pages a night after coming home from the library. Perhaps the problem was the story she'd chosen. She wanted to write about a filly named Night Song, but every time she started, her memories of the real Night Song invaded her thoughts, crippling her imagination. Here it was Monday night, and she sat staring at the screen, convinced nothing she wrote had any merit. The only reason she kept trying was that Dan had pressured her into it. He seemed to believe her world would right itself once Rory was back to creating her warm, light-hearted children's stories. The phone rang, and grateful for a reprieve, Rory hurried into the kitchen to answer it.
Is this Miss Rory Campbell of San Francisco, California?
Yes, it is. Her heart tripped with anxiety. In a matter of 2 seconds, every horrible scenario of what could have happened to her parents or her brother darted through Rory's mind.
This is Devin Logan calling.
He paused as though expecting her to recognize the name. Rory didn't. Yes?
Devin Logan, he repeated. From the Nightingale, Oregon Town Council? He paused. I believe you're acquainted with my daughter, Kate?
Yes, I remember Kate. If her heart continued at this pace, Rory thought she'd keel over in a dead faint. Just as her pulse had started to slow, it shot up again. Has anything happened?
The council meeting adjourned about 10 minutes ago. Are you referring to that?
No, I mean, has anything happened to Kate?
Not that I'm aware of. Do you know something I don't?
I don't think so. This entire conversation was driving her crazy. Devin Logan cleared his throat, and when he spoke, his voice dropped to a deeper pitch.
I'm phoning in an official capacity, he said. We voted at the town council meeting tonight to employ a full-time librarian.
He paused again, and not knowing what else to say, Rory murmured, Congratulations. Kate mentioned that the library was currently being run by part-time volunteers.
It was decided to offer you the position.
Rory nearly dropped the receiver. I beg your pardon?
My daughter managed to convince the council that we need a full-time librarian for our new building. She also persuaded us that you're the woman for the job.
But hardly able to take in what she was hearing, Rory slumped against the kitchen wall, glad of its support. Logan's next remark was even more surprising.
We'll match whatever the San Francisco library is paying you, and throw in a house in town, rent-free.
Rory's mind was buzzing. Kate obviously thought she was doing her a favor, when in fact being so close to Clay would be utter torment.
Miss Campbell?
I'm honored, she said quickly, still reeling with astonishment. Truly honored, but I'm going to have to decline. A moment of silence followed.
All right. I'm authorized to enhance the offer by 10% over the amount you're currently earning, but that's our final bid. You'd be making as much money as the fire chief, and he's not about to let the council pay a librarian more than he's bringing home.
Mr. Logan, please,
the salary isn't the reason I'm turning down your generous offer. I want you to know how much I appreciate your offering me the job. Thank you, and thank Kate on my behalf, but I can't accept. Another longer silence vibrated across the line, as though he couldn't believe what she was telling him.
You're positive you want to refuse. Miss Campbell, we're being more than reasonable, more than generous.
I realize that. In fact, I'm flattered by your proposal, but I can't possibly accept this position.
Kate had the feeling you'd leap at the job.
She was mistaken.
I see. Well, then, it was good talking to you. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to meet while you were in Nightingale. Perhaps next time.
Perhaps. Only there wouldn't be a next time. Rory kept her hand on the receiver long after she'd hung up. Her back was pressed against the kitchen wall, her eyes closed. She'd regained a little of her composure when the doorbell chimed. A glance at the wall clock told her it was Dan, who'd promised to drop by that evening. She straightened, forcing a smile, and slowly walked to the door. Dan entered with a flourish, handing her a small white bag.
"What's this?" she asked.
"Frozen yogurt. Just the thing for a girl with a hot keyboard. How's the writing going?"
He leaned forward to kiss her cheek. Rory walked into the kitchen and set the container in the freezer compartment of her refrigerator.
"It's not. If you don't mind, I'll eat this later."
"Rory." Dan caught her by her shoulders and studied her face. "You're as pale as chalk. What's wrong?"
I just got off the phone. I was offered another job as head librarian."
"But, darling, that's wonderful."
"In Nightingale, Oregon."
The change in Dan's expression was almost comical. "And? What did you tell them?"
"I refused."
He gave a great sigh of relief. His eyes glowed and he hugged her impulsively. "Does this mean what I think it does? Are you finally over that cowpoke, Rory? Will you finally consent to be my wife?"
Rory lowered her gaze. "Oh, Dan, don't you understand? I'll never get over Clay. Not next week, not next month, not next year." Her voice was filled with pain and with conviction.
Everyone seemed to assume that in time she'd forget about Clay Franklin, but she wouldn't.
Dan's smile faded, and he dropped his arms to his sides.
"I see."
Leaning against the counter, he sighed pensively and said,
"I'd do just about anything in the world for you, Rory. But I think it's time we faced a few truths."
Rory had wanted to confront them long before now.
"You're never going to love me the way you do that horseman. We can't go on like this. It isn't doing either of us any good to pretend your feelings are going to change."
He looked so grim and discouraged that she didn't point out that he was the one who'd been pretending.
"I'm so sorry to hurt you. It's the last thing I ever wanted to do," she told him sincerely.
"It isn't as if I didn't know," he admitted. "You've been honest with me from the start. I can't be less than honest with you. That country boy loves you. I knew it the minute he walked across the street without even noticing the traffic. The whole world would know," he said ruefully. "All he has to do is look at you, and everything about him shouts his feelings. He may be engaged to another woman, but it's you he loves."
"I wouldn't fit into his world."
"But Rory, you're lost and confused in your own."
She bit her lower lip and nodded. Until Dan said it, she hadn't recognized how true that was. But it didn't change the fact that Clay belonged to Kate, and she was marrying him within the month.
"I'm sorry," Dan said, completely serious, "but the wedding's off."
She nearly laughed out loud at Dan's announcement. No wedding had ever been planned.
He'd asked her to marry him at least 10 times since she'd returned from her vacation, and each time she'd refused. Instead of wearing her down as he'd hoped, Dan had finally come to accept her decision. Rory felt relieved, but she was sorry to lose her friend. "I didn't mean to lead you on," she told him, genuinely contrite. He shrugged.
"The pain will only last for a while. I'm a keeper, as the girls in the office like to tell me. I guess it's time I put out the word that I'm available."
He wiggled his eyebrows, striving for some humor. "You've been such a good friend." He cupped her face and gently kissed her.
"Yes, I know. Now don't let that yogurt go to waste. You're too thin as it is."
She smiled and nodded. When she let him out of the apartment, Rory bolted the door, then leaned against it, feeling drained but curiously calm. Dan had been gone only a few minutes when Rory's phone rang again. She hurried into the kitchen to answer it.
"Rory, this is Kate Logan."
"Kate, how are you?"
"Rotten, but I didn't call to talk about me. I want to know exactly why you're refusing to be Nightingale's librarian after everything I went through. I can't believe you, Rory. How can you do this to Clay? Don't you love him?"
16. "Kate," Rory demanded, "what are you talking about?"
"You and Clay," she said sharply, sounding quite unlike her usual self. "Now, do you love him or not? I've got to know."
This day had been sliding steadily downhill from the moment Rory had climbed out of bed that morning. To admit her feelings for Clay would only hurt Kate, and Rory had tried so hard to avoid upsetting the other woman.
"Well," Kate said with a sob, "the least you can do is answer me."
"Oh, Kate," Rory said, her heart in her throat, "why are you asking me if I love Clay? He's engaged to you. It shouldn't matter one little bit if I love him or not. I'm out of your lives, and I intend to stay out."
"But he loves you."
The tears in Kate's voice tore at Rory's already battered heart. She would have given anything to spare her friend this pain.
"I know," she whispered. "Doesn't that mean anything to you?"
"Only the world and everything in it." "Yes," she murmured, her voice growing stronger.
"Then how could you do this to him?"
"Do what?"
Rory didn't understand. "Hurt him this way."
"Kate," Rory pleaded, "I have no idea what you're talking about. I'd never intentionally hurt Clay. If you insist on knowing, I do love him, with all my heart. But he's your fiancé. You loved him long before I even knew him." Kate's short laugh was riddled with sarcasm.
"What is this? First come, first served?"
"Of course not.
For your information, Clay isn't my fiancé anymore," Kate blurted, her voice trembling. "He hasn't been in weeks, since before he went to San Francisco for the horse show."
Rory's head came up so fast she wondered whether she'd dislocated her neck.
"He isn't? That's what I just told you."
"But I thought, I assumed."
"I know what you assumed. That much is obvious. But it isn't like that now, and it hasn't been in a long time."
"But you love Clay," Rory muttered, feeling lightheaded.
"I've loved him from the time I was in pigtails. I love him enough to want to see him happy. Why do you think I talked my fool head off to a bunch of hard-nosed council members? Why do you think I ranted and raved about what a fantastic librarian you are? I as good as told them you're the only person who could possibly assume full responsibility for the new library. Do you honestly think I did all that for the fun of it?"
"No, but Kate, surely you understand why I have to refuse. I just couldn't bear to come between you and—" Kate wouldn't allow her to finish, and when she spoke, her voice was high and almost hysterical.
"Well, if you believe that, Rory Campbell, then you've got a lot to learn about me, and even more about Clay Franklin.
Kate, I'm sorry. Please listen to me. There's so much I don't understand. We've got to talk, because I can't make head or tail out of what you're telling me, and I've got to know if you have anything to say to me, Rory Campbell, then you can do it to my face. Now, I'm telling Dad and everyone else on the council that you've accepted the position we so generously offered you. The job starts in 2 weeks, and you damn well better be here. Understand?
Rory's car left a dusty trail on the long, curving driveway that led to the Circle L Ranch. It had been a week since the telephone call from Kate, and Rory still had trouble assimilating what the other woman had told her. Their conversation repeated itself over and over in her mind until nothing made sense. But one thing stood out. Kate was no longer engaged to Clay. Rory was going to him, running as fast as she could, but first she had to settle matters with his former fiancé. The sun had begun to descend in an autumn sky when Rory parked her car at the Logan Ranch and climbed out. Rotating her neck and shoulders to relieve some of the tension there, Rory looked around, wondering if anyone was home. She'd been on the road most of the day, so she was exhausted and exhilarated. Luke Rivers strolled out of the barn and stopped when he saw Rory. His smile deepened. It could have been Rory's imagination, but she sensed that the hard edge was missing from his look, as though life had unexpectedly tossed him a good turn.
"So you're back," he said by way of greeting.
Rory nodded, then reached inside the car for her purse. "Is Kate here?"
"She'll be back any minute. Usually she gets home from the school around 4. Come inside and I'll get you a cup of coffee."
"Thanks." At the moment, coffee sounded like nectar from the gods. Luke opened the kitchen door for her.
"I understand you're going to be Nightingale's new librarian," he said,
following her into the house. "Yes, but that wasn't the reason she'd come back, and they both knew it."
"Good."
Luke took 2 mugs from the cupboard and filled them from a coffee pot that sat on the stove. He placed Rory's cup on the table, then pulled out a chair for her.
"Thanks, Luke."
The sound of an approaching vehicle drew his attention. He parted the lace curtain at the kitchen window and looked out.
"That's Kate now," he said,
his gaze lingering on the driveway.
"Listen, if I don't get a chance to talk to you later, I want you to know I'm glad you're here. I've got a few things to thank you for. If it hadn't been for you, I might have turned into a crotchety old saddle bum."
Before Rory could ask what he meant, he was gone. Kate burst into the kitchen a minute later and hugged Rory as though they were long-lost sisters.
"I don't know when I've been happier to see anyone."
Rory's face must have shown her surprise because Kate hurried to add,
"I suppose you think I'm a crazy woman after the way I talked to you on the phone last week. I don't blame you, but, well, I was upset, to put it mildly, and my thinking was a little confused."
She threw her purse on the counter and reached inside the cupboard for a mug. She poured the coffee very slowly, as if she needed time to gather her thoughts. Rory's mind was whirling with questions she couldn't wait for Kate to answer.
"Did I understand you correctly the other night? Did you tell me you and Clay are no longer engaged?"
Kate wasn't able to disguise the flash of pain that leaped into her deep blue eyes. She dropped her gaze and nodded.
"We haven't been in weeks."
But Kate sat down across the table from Rory and folded her hands around the mug.
"The thing is, Rory, I knew how you two felt about each other since the night of the Grange dance. A blind man would have known you and Clay had fallen in love, but it was so much easier for me to pretend otherwise." Her finger traced the rim of the mug. "I thought that once you went home, everything would go back to the way it was before."
"I was hoping for the same thing. Kate, you've got to believe me when I tell you I would have done anything in the world to spare you this."
When I learned you and Clay were engaged, I wanted to die, Kate finished for her. I know exactly how you must have felt, because that's the way I felt later. The night of the Grange dance, Clay kept looking at you. Every time you danced with a new partner, he scowled. He might have had me at his side, but his eyes followed you all over the hall. He loves you, too, Rory told her. That's what makes this all so difficult. No, he doesn't, Kate answered flatly, without a hint of doubt. I accepted that a long time before you ever arrived. Oh, he respects me and likes me, and to Clay's way of thinking, that was enough. She hesitated, frowning. To my way of thinking, it was too. We probably would have married and been content. But everything changed when Clay met you. You hit him right between the eyes, Rory. A direct hit.
I'm sure he feels more for you than admiration.
No. Kate rummaged in her purse for a tissue. He told me as much himself. But like I said, it wasn't something I didn't already know. You see, I was so crazy about Clay, I was willing to take whatever he offered me, even if it was only second best. She swabbed at the tears that sprang so readily to her eyes and paused in an effort to gather her composure. I'm sorry. It's still so painful. But you see, through all of this, I've learned a great deal about what it means to love someone. Rory's own eyes welled with involuntary tears, which she hurriedly brushed aside. Then Kate's fingers clasped hers and squeezed tight in a gesture of reassurance. I learned that loving people means placing their happiness before your own. That's the way you love Clay, and it's the way he loves you. Kate squared her shoulders and inhaled a quavery breath. Kate, please, this isn't necessary. Yes, it is, because what I've got to say next is the hardest part. I need to ask your forgiveness for that terrible letter I wrote after you left Nightingale. I don't have any excuse, except that I was insane with jealousy.
Letter? You wrote me a terrible letter?
The only one Rory had received was the chatty note that had told her about Mary's prize-winning ribbon and made mention of the upcoming wedding. I used a subtle form of viciousness, Kate replied, her voice filled with self-contempt. Rory discounted the possibility that Kate could ever be malicious. The only letter I got from you wasn't the least bit terrible. Kate lowered her eyes to her hands, neatly folded on the table. Her grip tightened until Rory was sure her nails would cut her palms.
I lied in that letter, Kate continued. When I told you that Clay wouldn't have time for you while he was at the horse show, I was trying to imply that you didn't mean anything to him anymore. I wanted you to think you'd slipped from his mind, when nothing could have been further from the truth.
Don't feel bad about it. I'm not so sure I wouldn't have done the same thing.
No, Rory, you wouldn't have. That letter was an underhand attempt to hold on to Clay. I was losing him more and more each day, and I thought, I hoped, that if you believed we were going to be married in October, then, oh, I don't know. My thinking was so warped and desperate.
Your emotions were running high at the time. Rory's had been, too. She understood Kate's pain because she'd been in so much pain herself.
But I was pretending to be your friend, when in reality, I almost hated you.
Kate paused, her shoulders shaking with emotion.
That was the crazy part. I couldn't help liking you and wanting to be your friend. And at the same time, I was eaten alive with jealousy and selfish resentment.
It's not in you to hate anyone, Kate.
I didn't think it was either, but I was wrong. I can be a terrible person, Rory. Facing up to that hasn't been easy.
She took a deep, shuddering breath.
Then, a few days after I mailed that letter to you, Clay came over to the house wanting to talk. Almost immediately, I realized I'd lost him. Nothing I could say or do would change the way he felt about you. I said some awful things to Clay that night. He's forgiven me, but I need your forgiveness too.
Oh, Kate, of course, but it isn't necessary. I understand. I truly do.
Thank you, she murmured, dabbing her eyes with the crumpled tissue. Now I've got that off my chest, I feel a whole lot better.
But if Clay had broken your engagement when he came to San Francisco, why didn't he say anything to me? Kate shrugged.
I don't know what happened while he was gone, but he hasn't been himself since. He never has been a talkative person, but he seemed to draw even further into himself when he came back. He's working himself into an early grave, everyone says. Mary's concerned about him. We all are. Mary said if you didn't come soon, she was going after you herself.
Mary said that?
The housekeeper had been the very person who'd convinced Rory she was doing the right thing by getting out of Clay's life.
Well, are you going to him? Are you planning to stick around here and listen to me blubber all day?
If you give me any more time, she said, forcing a laugh, I'll manage to make an even bigger fool of myself than I already have.
Kate stood abruptly, pushing back the kitchen chair. Her arms were folded around her waist, her eyes bright with tears. Kate, Rory murmured, you are a dear, dear friend. I owe you more than it's possible to repay.
The only thing you owe me is one godchild, and about 50 years of happiness with Clay Franklin. Now get out of here before I start weeping in earnest.
Kate opened the kitchen door, and Rory gave her an impulsive hug before hurrying out. Luke Rivers was standing in the yard, apparently waiting for her. When she came out of the house, he sauntered over to her car and held open the driver's door.
Did everything go all right with Kate? Rory nodded. Well, he said soberly, there may be more rough waters ahead for her. She doesn't know it yet, but I'm buying out the Circle L.
Then he smiled, his eyes crinkling.
She's going to be fine, though. I'll make sure of that.
He extended his hand, gripping hers in a firm handshake.
Let me be the first to welcome you to our community.
Thank you. He touched the rim of his hat in farewell, then glanced toward the house.
I think I'll go inside and see how Kate's doing.
Rory's gaze skipped from the foreman to the house and then back again. You do that. If Luke Rivers had anything to say about it, Kate wouldn't be suffering from a broken heart for long. Rory had suspected Luke was in love with Kate, but, like her, he was caught in a trap, unable to reveal his feelings. Perhaps now Kate's eyes would be opened. Rory fervently hoped so. The drive from the Logan's place to the Franklins took no more than a few minutes. Rory parked her car behind the house, her heart pounding. When she climbed out, the only one there to greet her was Mary.
About time you got here,
the housekeeper complained, marching down the porch steps with a vengeance. Could this be the apple pie blue ribbon holder of Nightingale, Oregon? Mary actually blushed, and Rory laughed. I thought you'd never want to see the likes of me again, she teased.
Fiddlesticks!
The weathered face broke into a smile. I'm still a city girl, Rory warned.
That's fine, 'cause you got the heart of a country girl.
Wiping her hands dry on her apron, Mary reached for Rory and hugged her. After one brief, bone-crushing squeeze, she set her free.
I'm a meddling old woman, sure enough, and I suspect the good Lord intends to teach me more than one lesson in the next year or two. I'd best tell you that I never should have said those things I did about Kate being the right woman for Clay.
Mary, you spoke out of concern. I know that.
Clay doesn't love Kate, she continued, undaunted. But my heavens, he does love you. That boy's been pining his heart out for want of you.
He hasn't been the same from the minute you drove out of here all those weeks ago.
Rory had suffered too, but she didn't mention that to Mary. Instead, she slipped her arm around the housekeeper's broad waist, and together they strolled toward the house.
Clay's gone for the day, but he'll be back within the hour.
An hour, Rory repeated. She'd waited all this time. Another 60 minutes shouldn't matter.
Dinner will be ready then, and it's not like Clay or Skip to miss a meal. Dinner's been at 6 every night since I've been cooking for this family, and that's a good many years now.
Mary's mouth formed a lopsided grin.
Now, what we'll do is this. You be in the dining room waiting for him, and I'll tell him he's got company.
But won't he notice my car? Rory twisted around, gesturing at her old white Toyota, her own car this time, parked within plain sight.
Mary shook her head. I doubt it. He's never seen your car, so far as I know, only that fancy sports car. Anyway, the boy's been working himself so hard, he'll be too tired to notice much of anything.
Mary opened the back door, and Rory stepped inside the kitchen. As she did, the house seemed to fold its arms around her in welcome. She paused, breathing in the scent of roast beef and homemade biscuits. It might not be sourdough and Golden Gate Park roses, but it felt right. More than right.
Do you need me to do anything? Rory asked. Mary frowned, then nodded.
There's just one thing I want you to do. Make Clay happy.
Oh, Mary, I intend to start doing that the second he walks through that door. An hour later, almost to the minute, Rory heard Skip and Clay come into the kitchen.
What's for dinner? Skip asked immediately. It's on the table. Now wash your hands.
Rory heard the teenager grumble as he headed down the hallway to the bathroom.
How'd the trip go?
Mary asked Clay. He mumbled something Rory couldn't hear.
The new librarian stopped by to say hello. Old man Logan and Kate sent her over. Thought you might like to meet her.
I don't. I hope you got rid of her. I'm in no mood for company.
Nope, Mary said. Fact is, I invited her to stay for dinner. The least you can do is wipe that frown off your face and go introduce yourself.
Rory stood just inside the dining room, her heart ready to explode. By the time Clay stepped into the room, tears had blurred her vision, and she could hardly make out the tall, familiar figure that blocked the doorway. She heard his swift intake of breath, and the next thing she knew, she was crushed in Clay's loving arms.